Hello everyone, welcome back to Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik. We are coming to you from Sweden in Scandinavia. We are here on Thursdays and Sundays doing radio programs and live webcasts from our studio on all and everything that we consider to be interesting and important. If you're new to the program, head on over to our website, redicecreations.com, and follow along in what we're doing. If you're a regular listener, welcome. Nice to have you with us here today. And we are going to talk about the Order of the Illuminati today. We have Terry Melanson with us. He's behind the website conspiracyarchive.com, a very interesting source of essays, articles, and news updates on all things related to conspiracy, corruption, geopolitics, and secret societies. And Terry has also just finished a new book with the title Perfectibilists, the 18th Century Bavarian Order of the Illuminati. And the book is not yet released, but it is available for pre-orders through Amazon.com right now. And I've wanted to get you on the program for some time now, Terry, so it's great to finally have you with us. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thanks a lot for having me.
You know, I'd just like to ask you before we kind of dive into the meat, I guess, of your new book, just a little bit about your website. I've been following it for quite some time now, and I just wanted to ask you, how long have you been doing the site right now, conspiracyarchive.com?
Since 2002, early 2002.
Right.
Before that, I had like a small site on GeoCities since 2000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the articles I wrote way back then, when I got my own domain name, I just put them on the new one here. But I've been going ever since, nonstop since 2000, I guess, just collecting material and on the New World Order and the Illuminati and stuff.
Absolutely, and looks great. It's a great resource, and I mean, there's tons of material up there, you know, for people to check out and dive further into. And I guess you have some columnists as well. I guess Paul and Philip Collins, right, are two guys you also know. Is that correct?
Yeah, they wrote about probably about 50 some articles between them. The most prolific I have. Barry Shamish used to write a bunch for my site too, and David Livingston.
Yeah.
He was on the show there a while back.
Yes. Okay, excellent. And how is everything is going good with the website? I guess you updated recently, and with the new blog and so forth, and publishing news that people can follow along in. And it's a great resource for everyone out there to check out, the conspiracyarchive.com. So, you know, why don't we dive into a little bit of some of the content, I guess of your new book here, Perfectibilists, the 18th Century Bavarian Order of the Illuminati. And basically, I guess the best way to begin is from the top or from the beginning. And I'd like to get your take on the Order of the Illuminati. There's so much information out there on this order right now. But tell us, give us a little bit of background of what you kind of discovered when it comes to the origins of the Illuminati, Terry.
Well, there's a lot of information, you're right, but most of the information you find on the web, or even in books, like recent books that have mentioned the order, they actually don't go back to the original documents or the original writers who wrote what was going on, like the contemporary writers like Barriel and Robinson. So, like around 2004, that big hoopla about the Da Vinci Code was going on, and it was selling like millions and millions of copies. And then once people read his book, they decided to go look for his other books, and they found that there was another book he wrote before that, and that was about the protagonists, or the antagonists were the Illuminati this time instead of the Priory of Zion. So naturally, when they started typing in Illuminati into the search engines, it came right to my site. So they're asking me, is it true what Dan Brown said about this, and is it true what he said about that and everything. So I started replying to them, but it got overwhelming, so I decided to, I looked at what I already had on my own site, and I noticed that it wasn't exactly what I thought. I needed to research more before I was telling them, before I could tell them what the Illuminati was.
Yeah.
Basically, I was telling them what it wasn't, right? So I just I bought a bunch of books. I bought Barviel and went back and looked at Robinson and Billington. So I started researching that and getting back to the original writings of what they actually said to show the people exactly what they were all about. And then I posted an article on it. It was about 50 pages. Word doc, and I posted it on my site, and like after that, I get offered the book deal.
Okay.
But then after, if I'm going to write a book, I still got to delve further into it, right? So I went and searched for the actual original writing, and I found a copy in French, and I went back to the sources that are considered authoritative, like a guy in France in 1914, his PhD thesis for a history PhD was on the Illuminati, so I got his book too. And basically that was like the main sources, you could say, of what really went on back then.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it was escalated into a 3-year research project, I guess. It took me 3 years to write it.
And what would you say, I mean, We know a little bit about the background story. Those who are in the information flow and are, you know, researching some of these topics. The classic outline is that Adam Weishaupt founded the order in 1776 in Bavaria, obviously Ingolstadt, and he was had a background as a Jesuit. He was trained, I think, at a Jesuit college, and then started this order. Is there something right there that you would say is not truthful in regards to the sources that you've checked into?
Well, that's basically the beginning of it, yeah. When he was at the university, he was he had quarrels with the Jesuits who were already there, and then even before the Jesuits got banned in 1773. So it was back and forth between the professors there that were Jesuits or affiliated with the Jesuits, and they were always basically after him for one reason or another, because he wanted to bring the Enlightenment to Bavaria, which Bavaria at that time was still basically backwards when it came to the rest of Europe, right? So 1776, he finally had enough. He was having fights with them back and forth, and he instituted the order.
And would you say that that his, you know, his intentions? What do you think that they were? Do you think that they were from a, you know, from a benevolent background, so to speak, or did, you know, did he want to do this because he wanted to bring, you know, science to the people of that region, or was there something other behind this?
I figure it was because he was adopted by Baron von Eichstadt, right? And this Baron von Eichstadt was the head of the university itself, and he was already a philosopher, and he taught the other Maximilian III, the Bavarian Elector before Karl Theodor, he had taught him. He was a tutor for him, and he was teaching all kinds of people in the university, but he was an adherent of the Enlightenment also, and his quarrels with the Jesuits were constant even before Weishaupt was appointed to be a professor at the university.
Mm-hmm.
But he had him on his side, but when he died in 1776, it was was just after that that he decided to create the Order. It was kind of like a little group within inside the university that could fight against the rest of the Jesuits and the religious absolutists.
And
so that's probably the reason why he did it, like to gather a bunch of people together with the same views. A few of his students were indoctrinated, like when he made it on May 1st, 1776, there was five that were initiated on that day.
And yeah.
It was him and four others. The other four were basically his students.
And do you think that he did right? Did he come from a perspective? Do you think that he did this because there were problems with the authority of the day in that area? Do you think it was justified to do something like that?
Yeah, for sure. Even the authorities in the day in Bavaria was kind of like a medieval enclave. It was like you had in France the philosophers who already back in the early 1700s. They're writing all kinds of books, and they weren't getting censored, really, what they're allowed to say, unless they wrote books that advised people to go out and kill kings or whatever, right? And then in England, that happened in the late 1600s already, through their own enlightenment, sort of. And it was only in Bavaria, really, that the stronghold of the Jesuits were, like, keeping everybody down. So, especially at the university, because they made the university, and they were controlling the university. But with his godfather, Ickstad, he was kind of keeping them under wraps and wasn't letting them get too much out of hand. But as Whiteshop's lectures to his students and stuff, he would recommend books like The Enlightenment Philosophers, Helvetius, Voltaire, and Rousseau, and stuff like that.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, please continue.
Yeah, so it started off small, really. His intention basically was to gather a group together so he could help combat the religious authorities that were still controlling everything.
Yes, and primarily also, would you say that this, there are so many ideas here about what the, true purpose of the Illuminati was. One might be say that it's only to overthrow government. Some might say it's only to overthrow nobility and already aristocrats. Some say it's only to destroy religion and so forth. But I mean, on one level, all of them might be true. What would you say to that? Is there one that is more one agenda here that is more prominent than another?
Well, basically, you got to look at his sources, right? You got to look at the speeches he made to the initiates as they were ascending the ladder. So, if you go back to the original sources, you can get back to the actual what he said to whoever it was at a certain point in time. In this letter, he said this, and this letter, he said that. That's what you got to do when you look back at the history of it. So, his philosophy basically was Rousseauian primitive egalitarianism. Right? He preached to the disciples that we should dispense with kings and nobility and take it all the primitive anarchism. I don't know if you heard about that before.
Well, of course, there is definitely connections there, and the question then is, is this one of the first revolutionaries in that sense? Would you say in regards to kind of, I guess we can connect this with a socialist type of ideology. Would you say that that's correct, or is that erroneous?
No, that's correct. That's even before the French revolutionaries were preaching it to the Jacobins, were preaching this stuff. It was him who started it. And what he did was he took the teachings of Rousseau and a few others that were preaching the egalitarian virtue, primitivism and social revolutionary egalitarianism, equality, liberty, and back to the primitive origin of man, and dispense with the kings and rulers. It was basically anarchy, and it was our precursor to anarchy, is what it was.
And
it was anarchy.
Yes. And so the question is here, what happened? We don't have to move into the area yet, I guess, of how this ideology managed to kind of turn around. And now in these days, many people consider that the Illuminati is actually the part of the monarchy itself. And we can go there a little bit later. But I heard this one story, for instance, regarding how the Illuminati was discovered when they were in the process of setting it up and planning their, domination over the world, basically. The story goes that a priest, I think it was, or someone, a member in the Illuminati, was carrying documents from one area to another, and he was actually struck by lightning. Have you been able to confirm if that's true or not?
Yeah, it was a guy named Jacob Lance, and he was a priest. They actually indoctrinated many priests. Priests are one of the most prominent members. Part of my book is like biographies. I got 447 biographies. The range is 250 pages long inside the book.
Mm, okay.
And I got official lists that were written about by history professors in Germany and stuff. Anyways, this guy was a priest, Jacob Lance, and he was there in Regensburg when Weishaupt was there. He had to flee the university at Ingolstadt, and as he was trying to find refuge somewhere, his first stop was in Regensburg because it was a free imperial city, right? So kings or dukes didn't have any control over it. It was only the emperor that had say what happened within a free imperial city. So he stayed there for a while and tried to think about what he was going to do next. And this Jacob Lance, he was the head of the Erfurt Mineral Church. So he was indoctrinating people. He was like the head of the actual Mineral Church itself. So he was privy to the secrets. And when he was on a mission, he was going from, I forget where he was going from. Anyways, his destination was going to be Silesia. Or Silesia?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you pronounce it. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And on his way, he stopped there in Regensburg to talk to Weishaupt, and I guess Weishaupt gave him his orders what to do once you get there. I actually wrote an article about it on my new site, BavarianIlluminati.info.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's actually true. And what the heck is that about? Is that divine intervention or what?
Okay, here's the... Let me see what the plan was. All right, his plan, when he was going to go to Silesia, was going to be... He was going to find out the names of the lodges and all the villages and towns in which they were located.
The Freemasonic lodges.
He was going to find out the master of the chair of all the lodges that were there.
Mm-hmm.
He was on a scouting mission to see if they could... to export Illuminism into Silesia, right? So this was like in Central Europe and stuff, Poland, and what was around there? Basically, it's Poland and Bohemia, right?
Yeah, that's the old...
He stopped there to consult with Weishaupt, and as he was getting ready to leave on the mission, he was standing there on horseback, him and Weishaupt, all of a sudden lightning came down and struck him dead right on the spot. And it's an actual true story.
Yeah.
Hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when his body was taken back to his diocese, which was in Erfurt, they found sewn into his clothes the plans that probably Weishaupt gave him. And like the article I wrote, I talked about the plans of exactly what the plans were. He was going to go to seek out all the lodges in the area, and he was going to find out what they knew about the Illuminati and what they thought about the Jesuits, and are they against the Jesuits and like they are and stuff, basically a recruiting mission. Plus, on top of that, there was a list of members as well. So, and this was after the second edict that was written against the order by the Bavarian elector. So when they found that out, it was proof positive that they were still continuing the intrigue, right?
Yes. And are there some, you know, more prominent members by name that we might, you know, relate to today? You know, some more, you know, were the people from, like, from churches, or were there even people from nobility themselves, or was this only, you know, political people? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I got 447 bios. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's 250 pages.
Okay.
Basically, there's all kinds of nobility. There's most of them are Baron Von, whatever.
Okay.
Or Duke Von, or Count, whatever.
But isn't that...
What happened was pardon?
Sorry, continue.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what happened was when Baron Von Knigge, right?
Yes.
He was initiated, he was like a high-ranking member of strict observance Freemasonry already, which believed in the Templar origin of Freemasonry. And so he was already well-connected with everybody and basically knew all the high-ranking ones. And back then, all the nobility joined Freemasonry, right? So when the Congress of Wilhelmsbad convened in 1782, the reason why they even convened the conference was to either adhere to the teachings of strict observance and confirm that they were actually descended from the Templars and everything,
mm-hmm.
or actually to ban it outright and replace it with something else. So what they did was they came to the conclusion was all just made up. And so they did. They banned the teaching of strict observance, but Knigge was there with Ditfurth too. He was another high-ranking member. So what they did was they snatched up all the members, and they said, okay, we got another order here, and they explained what it was, and everybody started joining this one. So from there, in the mid-1780s, the membership just exploded through the roof. It was like, you know, less than 100, and even less than a year, it was up to 1,000, and then 2,000, and then 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them were nobility.
But that's very strange, though, isn't it? Because if they were from the beginning, if they were setting out to, you know, destroy the current, you know, order, basically, of how things were being run back then, why would nobility go and join an order like that? I don't get it.
Well, that's right, because, well, they were only taught that at the very highest degrees, the greater mysteries of the Illuminati, when they were finally taught the real teaching of what was going on. It was all one big conspiracy. They wanted a revolution, you know, get rid of kings, queens, whatever. So these nobility, they were chosen very tenuously. Like, they had to, they weren't ascended to the top of the ladder unless they actually were found out to agree with what the actual plan was.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
a few of them knew the real secrets, but most of them didn't. They were kept in the lower ranks.
Okay.
And surrounding them, like all the privy councils that were surrounding the courts, they were all Illuminati. So they would indoctrinate their sovereigns, right? Just to give them the title, okay, I'm a Mason now, I got this rank, and I joined this... right, so I'm going to join another one called the Illuminati. Basically, they didn't know what was going on.
Okay. Would you say that Knigge, Adolf Knigge, was one of these people who managed to get the nobility to join in there? Because someone must have started to spread the word about it, to spread the propaganda of what it was about, right?
Yeah. Basically, what was going on was there was two competing systems that were going on at the same time. It was a Templar origin of Freemasonry, which was strict observance, was the most prominent. And but there was also the Golden and Rosary Cross, which they practiced the rites that were descended from the actual Fama Fraternitatis in the 1600s and stuff. So they were competing for initiates as well. And basically there was a fight that was going on, people trying to initiate each other in their own mystical orders or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to join the Illuminati, you pledge yourself to the Enlightenment, to the rationalists, to the, you know, the French philosophers and the whole philosophy that was going on at the time. And the other guys were the mystical Martinists and the Swedenborgians and the Rosicrucians. What happened was they started learning what was going on because they weren't allowed to be initiated into it because they were mystics and they believed in spirituality and or mystical just all kinds of occultist themes and hermeticism, alchemy. So basically a fight was going on. They were trying to find out what was really behind the Illuminati order, and they would send out like directives to their different lodges strewn across Europe, and little bits were coming assuredly. And so basically what happened, the ex-Jesuits joined with the Rosicrucians to take down the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
So when they finally, in 1786, they broke into the house of Xavier von Zwack. He was like the second highest next to Bishop, and he had all the letters that were sent back and forth between the high-ranking members. He had copies of them in his house, and that's what they found. And when we talk about the original writings, that's what they found there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But basically, when they found that cache of letters, the original writings that were between them, they turned them over to Ignaz Frank. He was the next ex-Jesuit, was also just happened to be the head of the Munich Circle of the Golden and Rosy Cross.
Okay.
So he was the one that edited the cache of like 200 and something letters and all the things that they found in the guy's house. So basically they handed over to the ex-Jesuits and the Rosicrucians but they were the ones that were persecuting them in the first place. And a part of my book is like I translate official letters that were going back and forth between the heads of the Rosicrucians, like, and it shows that they were scheming, trying to bring them down the whole time.
Hmm, okay, interesting, because I'm reminded of, I think there is a quote by George Washington who is mentioning the Illuminati and the fact that he basically is, frightened for that this movement, the Sun Order or something that he refers to them as, has infiltrated even his government. Do you recall that?
Yeah, it's basically he was saying it's the same principles as Jacobinism. So I do not deny that the principles of Illuminism and Jacobinism had been imported here in America.
Hmm.
Basically, he was right, but he wasn't saying, I know for a fact that the Illuminati are here and they are over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He wasn't saying something like that.
Okay.
The principles, really.
Continue.
Well, I was just going to say, Jefferson, he defended Bishop, even like that famous letter that he wrote to a priest or something.
Okay.
That's my book too, anyway.
Okay, interesting. And so do you think Jefferson was he privy enough to know what really was going on behind the Illuminati, or on the higher levels, do you think?
Well, what happened was Jefferson, when he read the Abbé Barrière, his memoirs of the history of Jacobinism, he finally read it, and he sent a letter back to one of his friends saying, okay, I finally saw what everybody's talking about the Illuminati and stuff. He wrote a big long letter and said the principles of Bishop or the principles of liberty and everything, and he was basically defending Bishop, and he said outright that if he would have written what he did here in America, he said he wouldn't have been persecuted for his views and stuff, which is absolutely correct. But I don't think he read as deeply as he should have read into it, because he would have found out that Bishop was totally against private property. He was like before socialism was being preached in the French Revolution. That's the same ideology that he was touting to his disciples.
Okay. So let's see here, because there was during one time, and I don't know personally the dates or anything here, but or the year, but weren't the Illuminati banished or forbidden after some of the documents were discovered because of this guy who was struck by a lightning? Was it the king who banished them, who said now we forbid the secret society? And after that point, they probably moved underground. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Part of the book is a large part of it actually is a timeline tracing from Bishop's birth to the third edict from the Elector of Bavaria against secret societies and the Illuminati. So the first edict happened in 1784 sometime, and that was because a few of the members were switched sides and decided to rat on their brothers, right? And so they brought all kinds of incriminating evidence to the sister-in-law, to the Bavarian Elector. And after that, he issued his first edict against secret societies in general. He didn't actually name the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, in 1785, there was some more people that came forward and switched sides. And, this is what happened. After the guy was struck by lightning, it was in 1785. After that, there was proof, prima facie proof, that they were still continuing the intrigue. So that's when the second edict was decreed.
Okay.
The third edict was in 1787, and that the punishment, if they were going to continue, the punishment on the third edict was the death penalty. Basically, everybody fleed the Bavarian duchy after that, after it was escalated, like the punishment for what was going on. And a part of the book is that I have excerpts from the actual edicts itself, like long excerpts, translated word for word.
Interesting. And these were, German originally, is that's correct?
Yeah, they were printed in Le Forestier's PhD thesis in 1914, and he translated it into French, and I translated it into English.
Okay. So that there have been some research done on this way back then, in that sense, because what I've heard is that people like Myron Fagan, for instance, is one of these guys who helped to bring this to light yet again sometime in the, when was it, 60s, late 60s, early 70s, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Let's see here.
I'm not really sure. I heard about him, yeah.
Okay.
But basically, for the last 200 years, there hasn't been a monograph on the Illuminati. Like, Vernon Stolper, his PhD thesis back in, 1916, he wrote a PhD thesis, and one chapter was about the actual European Illuminati.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of it was about the Illuminati scare in America that went on afterwards, after the French Revolution and stuff.
Yes.
basically that was the only one, and people just mention it here and there in conspiracy books and stuff, you know, like a page or two, and mostly they get some of the facts right, but then they elaborate on it because they don't know the full story, right?
So did he write anything about that they were still, you know, operating in some way, or what was his what did he kind of describe in regards to the Illuminati?
Who's that? Vernon Stolfer?
Yeah, the guy who wrote the thesis or the PhD back in 1916, as you mentioned.
Yeah. Basically, he was of the same opinion as historians. They don't give it too much thought. They basically tell the story the way it went from 1776. They tell it, okay, the edict happened on this date, the second edict was this, and they talk about it a little bit, and then they basically say the third and final edict in 1787, which decreed a death penalty, if it still continued, basically they just stop it right there, and they don't even continue in research afterwards. When it's proven that they still continued, right? Like, people here and there still continued. There wasn't, you couldn't pinpoint the organization exactly. They did go underground, or some historians admit that.
Mm-hmm.
And they continued on into the 1790s, and they changed their name a few times, even.
Okay.
That's one thing I found out.
Do you know to what they changed their name to?
Okay, let me see here.
Because that's interesting to know and see if there's any names that we can bring up from what we've heard in regards to other secret societies or something like that. But
The key is that we know so many of the members now, right? And we weren't aware that over in Germany and France, the research continued. For the last 200 years, it was continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Books were published. Archives were finally opened up. The lists were piled on lists of actual members that we had no idea that were members. So when you trace these members and the goings-on of what they were doing after the Third Edict, a picture starts to emerge of what was going on.
Yep.
I can't find exactly what they're called. They were called two things after in the 1790s.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, the second head of the order was J.J.C. Bodhi, and basically he was given the reins after that, and he still continued recruiting in a bunch of other cities, and he went on a trip to France in 1787, and that's where he initiated actually six members of a really important lodge in France right before the French Revolution.
Okay, and when you say like a lodge in Europe, are these Freemasonic lodges that have been infiltrated by the Illuminati, or did they kind of, you know, set up their own, even build their own lodges? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, there's a few that they actually set up all by themselves. They applied for the patent, and they were given the patent to actually institute it.
But by whom? Who gives out a patent for that?
Depends on what right you're applying to, right? If you're applying to the Grand Orient, it comes from Paris at the Grand Orient, and if you're applying with regular three-degree Royal York, or I think it's 13 now they have, then you apply to England itself to get the patent.
And that's also...
It was based...
Isn't that also weird in one sense, because... wouldn't they do some kind of background check on this, you know, like let's say the Grand Lodge in England or something like that, that they check up on, okay, who are these people before they kind of give them permission,
the
I guess?
Top masons in all of Germany.
Come again?
They were the top masons in all of Germany.
Okay, so they could just do it, basically, then?
The Grand Masters of, the two Grand Masters of Germany itself were indoctrinated as members. But they didn't tell everybody they were members of a secret organization. But they were still the Grand Masters of all of Freemasonry, right?
Okay, yeah, okay.
Duke of Brunswick and Landgrave Carl of Hessen Castle.
Ah, okay.
The two major ones that control the destiny of all of German Freemasonry. So when you get them two members, basically you can do anything, right?
Yes, I see. That's interesting. Do you know anything in regards to Charles de Lorraine, if he were involved in the Illuminati in some way?
Who is that?
Charles de Lorraine.
Charles who?
De Lorraine, of the Lorraine family in France. Yeah.
Oh, Lorraine.
Yes.
Oh, no.
He wasn't?
There was a few in France, though, that were indoctrinated. It had a hand in the French Revolution, and it only came to light in the 1990s. The diary of the second head of the Illuminati was discovered by a Nazi archivist, actually. He was pilfering the lodges when the Nazis came to power. And in one of the boxes that he found the original diary of the second head of the Illuminati in it.
Hmm.
But basically, people didn't believe him, right? Because he was saying, I looked in this diary, and he was saying that, yeah, here it is. He says, okay, I initiated this guy, and we decided to call ourselves under another name so as to use as a cover so they wouldn't know, and he named off all the people and everything.
Hmm.
Basically, they didn't believe him until, I guess, the access to the actual diary was allowed after, I think, it was housed in Moscow for a bit.
Okay.
And when they finally got access to it, a German professor published it in 1995. It was a diary of a journal of a trip from Weimar to Paris by J.J.C. Bodie.
Okay.
Second head of the Illuminati.
So that is the trace, so to speak, in regards to the information that is accessible even after the fact that they went underground, because many people would argue that it's very difficult to find proper information if they've gone underground and started to, you know, veil or, you know, speaking codes or what have you about the actual order. But what you're saying is that J.J.C. Bodie, he actually wrote about it in those terms, that this is still the Illuminati, but we now call ourselves under another name. Is that correct?
Yep, in France, he instituted a secret cell. I'm not sure if I want to give out the name right now of what it was called, because that's probably the crux of my main material in the book.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Share with us what you want. We want people to get a copy of the book, obviously, so that's fine. And, you know, what I want to do is I want to, if we can, also begin a little bit later here to tie this into I guess what's going on today, you know, in regards to the Illuminati order. Many people are still using this term as a kind of as an overarching term for all the different secret societies out there and basically the world conspiracy. And it would be interesting to get your take on that. But we have about 5 minutes or so here left before we can take a little break and then continue. But is there anything more that you think that is important or pertinent to mention in regards to the order and what was going on back in the, you know, 18th century?
I'm not sure. There's so many things I cover in the book, and it's kind of hard not to be on the same page if you don't have a copy yourself, right?
Yes, no, I don't. No, not yet. Well, okay, anyway,
at first, I was only going to do interviews when the actual book was out and it was in people's hands.
Yes, but that's fine. We're getting a little bit of a teaser here, as it were, and we can do another show down the road when we have an actual couple that we can sit down and go through some of the more some of the other material together or something like that. So that's fine. But I want to ask you if you're interested, Terry, continue talking more with us in our member section, and we can talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that is going on today. What do you think about that? Are you up for it?
Yeah, okay, no problem.
Okay, sure. But before we take our little break here, then let's just tell people again how they can get a copy right now, because as we mentioned here, it is not yet available, but it is, I guess, through Amazon. And Terry, where's the best place to go to get a copy or pre-order a copy of the book?
You can pre-order it basically at any bookstore you see online, but if you wanted to go to Trine Day itself, just type in trineday.com, and they're selling pre-orders there too. You'll see it on the front page right on the right.
Okay, very good. And again, tell us some of your websites so people can find a little bit more of what you're doing, so to speak.
Okay, I guess my first one is conspiracyarchive.com, and I've got a new one now, Bavarian-Illuminati.info, and that's where I'm just going to write about historical information that, you know, didn't make it in the book, or that I'm translating the original writings too. There's 800 pages to translate. I only got 11 so far, but I've been kind of busy with the book release and stuff, but eventually I'll get to the whole translation.
Okay, interesting.
It's the first time it's ever been translated in English, eh? So
very interesting. Are you doing the translation yourself, or are you, what do you call it, outsourcing that to someone else?
Yeah, I'm doing it myself. There was another guy that was going to help me, but I'm not sure if he's going to do it.
So you're savvy in both French and German, then? Is that correct?
Actually, my copy is a totally French translation. It was done took the guy 3 years, or 4 years to do it, from 1929 to 1933.
Hmm.
And it's probably going to take me that long, too, if not more.
Really? Okay. And is the language very difficult, or is it the fact that you don't know French that well, or why do you think it takes such a long time to do it?
He was doing it in a magazine, an old conspiracy magazine called Review of International Secret Societies.
Okay.
Greece. R.IS.S. So it was an installment, say, every month or so, I think, or every 2 weeks or something. And he'd do a little bit more and a little bit more. So from 1929 to 1933, that's how long it took him.
Okay, I see.
Like, I have a compendium of it all in one book that I bought from the guy who owns the rights to it. So that's what I'm going to use for the translation, to put it into English.
Okay, interesting. And
the most ideal situation, right? It's like one language removed from the original, but
yeah,
since I'm good at French, it'll be all right.
Okay. Well, oh yeah, that's right. You're up in Canada, so I guess you're set with the French language as well, then. But okay, let's take a little break here then, and then continue, Terry, talking more in our member section. And the websites again to check out is conspiracyarchive.com and also Bavarian-Illuminati.info for much more about this. And that's both of those, I guess, are good places to get a copy of the book as well. So again, thanks you very much, Terry, for this first segment. We'll take a break, and we'll return shortly then, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
We'll continue with Terry Melanson now. Part 2 is available for our members. If you're currently not subscribing and want to hear more and also get access to our entire radio archive, go to redicecreations.com and click on subscribe. We're going to discuss Illuminati in current times. The question is if they're still around. We'll talk more about Freemasonry, royalty, and where the New World Order system is taking us. We'll discuss the Green Agenda, Bilderbergers, CFR, socialism, communism, and anarchism. And we'll round things up talking about Beethoven and Mozart and their possible connection to the Illuminati. So we will talk more after this break. Thank you.